I'm Tim Yancey, inviting you to explore the fascinating realm of the paranormal, ghosts and hauntings, Bigfoot, UFOs, and alien abductions. Join me live every Sunday evening at 9 p.m. with the foremost authorities and experts in the world regarding the mysterious realm of the unexplained. The Encounters Paranormal Radio Series, as heard on WBZT 1230 AM. EncountersBroadcasting.com.
Hi, this is Luke.
And this is Tobin from Quest Research.
Hey, Tobin, what do you get when four guys with absolutely no video experience whatsoever decide to produce their own online paranormal TV show?
I don't know. What? Oh, wait. I do know. Ghost Diaries, right?
That's right.
You can check us out and get involved at www.questresearch.net. And the good thing about being new is that we will only get better.
Darker Side of the Moon, Thursday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time.
Visit our website at darkersideradio.com.
From horror movies to the paranormal, we cover it all.
It's a spooky, weird, and zany kind of show.
With your hosts,
Laura Moon
and Becky Ray.
Don't miss it.
I'd like to share a recent experience where I strongly believe that I encountered a shadow person.
When I looked, it was January 5th, 2046.
I want to find an explanation for it. I want to rule it out as, something that was logical.
There are many things we have yet to learn about and understand. Join us here at Supernatural Existence and learn about the many mysteries of the universe. Feel free to subscribe via any of your favorite podcast directories, including iTunes, or check us out on the Supernatural Existence website at www.globeye.com. The mysteries are waiting to be understood.
I really want to see something supernatural with my own eyes. Not hear it or think I heard it or anything like that. Actually see it with my own eyes, capture it on camera. Hear something weird or something like that.
This is Ghostly Talk.
More multitasking there. Good job. Yeah,
you are the master.
Changing up the bumps here, man. Thanks to Obituary for that.
Well, don't forget, all the music played on Ghostly Talk is independent.
Yeah. All these guys. It's been cool talking to all these guys and going, hey, man, you know, you mind if we use your stuff for the show? And they're like, yeah, that'd be cool, man.
It's so totally awesome.
Actually, that metal band we played earlier was a band called Hallows Eve. New Jersey, that has been around since the early days, since I was a kid. And they send me CDs, or they release a new album, they send me a disc for the show now. So thanks, guys. I appreciate it, and everybody here appreciates letting you use your music and stuff like that. So more to come here. What's going on, Doug? Who do we have coming up here?
Well, speaking of like when we were kids, this is amazing, because we have Tony Saletti, who's been investigating the paranormal for 39 years. Even I was a kid 39 years ago, which is amazing.
Whoa.
39 years, and has just finished his book entitled Fort Mifflin, A Paranormal History.
Mm.
The book is about the history of the paranormal activity that takes place in and around Fort Mifflin. Tony has spent hundreds of hours studying Fort Mifflin in its historical context, and many more hundreds of hours of paranormal investigation at the fort. The book examines the stories of, and now this is really, really cool because it's got it all, the Screaming Lady. The Faceless Man.
We got a Screaming Lady, too. Her name's Bonnie.
Yes.
We're also going to have a Nutless Man.
The Screaming Lady. The Faceless Man.
Well, Doug did start the show. Sorry. Go ahead.
The Desecrated Graveyard. The Lamplighter. The Children and Dogs. The Drowned Man. The Sad Man. And a Philadelphia Experiment connection, and many others.
This is going to be
awesome. I want everybody to go to www.aparanormalhistory.com, and A Paranormal History is no spaces, no hyphens, no nothing. You just write it all out. www.aparanormalhistory.com, and Ghostly Talk would like to welcome to the show Tony Saletti. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's good to have you here,
Obviously, we're excited about all this phenomena and the history and everything like that. So let's dig in. How did you get
39 years, the story.
Yeah, that's been quite a while. So how did you get acquainted with Fort Mifflin and its history and everything like that? What drew you to that?
Well, actually, at the time, I was a Cub Scout, soon to become a Boy Scout. And my dad had gotten a letter from the society that was running Fort Mifflin at the time, asking for the help of Boy Scouts to help clean up the fort for the bicentennial. So this was 1968, 1969.
Mm-hmm.
And I first got there in 1969. And
speaking of the bicentennial, it sounds like the bicentennial celebration is happening behind you.
There's a parade.
Or there's a parade going on. I don't know. Is there? Do you hear music in the line, Tony?
Yeah, I can hear music in the line. Yes.
Is that?
Oh, you know what it is. I think it's my neighbor's television. I live in a row home.
Okay.
Oh man, that's a hell of a TV.
No, it's so interesting because, well, you know, they'll pick those little microphones.
Yeah, they're real sensitive.
They're going to pick up any, you know.
We just heard
that. They pick up the weirdest things, and that's really interesting. I hope we hear a ghost, too. I'm sorry to interrupt, but go ahead and where were we? We were Cub Scouts becoming a Boy Scout.
Yeah, and we went down with my scout troop to help clean up the fort. Now, the fort was in deplorable condition at that point. It was well overgrown. It had not been really cleaned up since 1952. So nature came back and took it. The fort used to be on an island. Now it's landlocked. They diked off the inland waterway of the fort to make more grazing land for cattle. And so what used to be an island is now a fort on the mainland of Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Wow. And it sounds so dramatic with that Neighbors TV. So, so it
my soundtrack.
But I'm familiar with this concept of nature taking over a historic site, because the same thing happened to the historic Octagon House in Utica, Michigan, where it was just, you know, after so many years, it really does just take over. So I completely understand. So there was a lot of work to do, Tony, and that's how you became familiar with it. And did you fall in love with this place, or did it just sort of happen, or did you have an experience? How did that work?
Well, I fell in love with the place as a fort.
Right.
My dad was in the Army Air Corps during World War II, and, you know, it was something that a father and son did together to, you know, bond. You know, we were there to honor the men and women who had served over the years at the fort by helping clean it up and getting it ready for the 200th anniversary of the country. So we were there just, it was bulwark. It was hot in the summer, you know. I don't know if you're familiar with the Philadelphia area. It's, when you're down by the river, there's mosquitoes, there's high humidity, much like, Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
was, because this area is once a swamp. It was, you know, as I had described. So we're there, and I was working on the water battery. That was an area outside the line of the fort, the walls of the fort, where they had cannons placed during the siege of 1777. Now, there was a good breeze, though hot, coming off the river. And while I was there, I kept smelling pipe tobacco. Now, unlike today, in 1969, almost all adults smoked.
Mm-hmm.
But no one was smoking either a pipe or a cigar that day, but it just kept coming and coming and coming. And later on in my research, I discovered that what I was probably experiencing was a olfactory manifestation of a discarnate entity,
mm-hmm.
or a haunting experience, to say it the way most people would understand it.
Interesting. What did you, when it was actually happening, did you just think, oh, that's weird? Oh, that's really weird? I mean, but didn't think about it much other than it being really weird? Or is it something that you actually related to somebody, thought it was important enough to say, oh my gosh, Dad, or some of the other workers, or when you were home, or did you relate it to somebody, or was it something you kept to yourself?
No, I mean, I kept asking. I said, who's smoking a pipe?
Ah.
And eventually my dad came over, and I said, hey, Dad, I said, Uncle Nick smokes a pipe. And I could smell it. It's not his tobacco, but it's a pipe tobacco. I know it's not a pipe tobacco. And he says, I haven't seen anybody here all day with a pipe. And that's what started to keen my interest on, you know, why was I smelling pipe tobacco on a very windy day on the river when there was nowhere around? And it was thick smoke. I mean, it wasn't visible smoke, but it was a thick odor of pipe. I don't know if any of you have any friends who are pipe smokers, but you can tell when it's like it's right next to you.
Yeah, my grandfather used to smoke a pipe back in the day when I was a kid, and that scent overpowers you if you're right there. So I know when you say that when you describe it as a thick smell, I know what you're talking about exactly, because it's not pungent, but it's just very thick,
yeah.
And it really overpowers your nose and stuff like that. So I know exactly what you're talking about, Tony.
Yeah, and as you know, if you with a relative that did, you should have been seeing the person with the pipe.
Right.
Well, I did. He was very much alive then. He's passed away now, unfortunately. But yeah, my grandfather was very much alive, so I could see that. But you were not seeing anybody, obviously. You were just smelling this pipe tobacco.
Yeah, I was just smelling the pipe tobacco. And that was my first experience at Fort Mifflin with the paranormal, the first of many.
How many folks were involved in this activity of cleaning up the fort? Because obviously it was, you know, having been, you know, abandoned and not cared for so long, it was a big project. Was it a volunteer organization, you know, or how did people come to care for it and want to clean it up?
There was a society that was in place at the time, the Shakamakan Society,
mm-hmm.
And named after a tribe of Indians from the area. And they were the ones that were basically had taken the lead in helping getting the fort ready. And when I say getting the fort ready, the center of the fort is 3 feet below sea level. And there's the Delaware River is a tidal river. So with any type of a high tide, you can get flooding all the time. So the rich silt of the river all the time would you know, the plants went wild. I mean, to the point where there were trees growing out of brick walls, you know, small trees.
Mm-hmm.
And on the second floors of buildings, there were trees growing on the second floors of buildings that had not been taken care of. So it was a group of volunteers. And I would say on the Saturdays that we'd go in there and we'd stay overnight and start work on again Sunday, and then we'd go to church, there would be about 100 adults and 100 scouts.
That is awesome. I applaud you for that. I know it was a while ago, but that you were looking at this task that had to be monumental, and everybody pitched in. I think that's amazing.
Well, you know, my dad's generation, and I guess it'd be some of your dad's or grandfather's generation, mm-hmm. they were the greatest generation. I mean, they fought back fascism, and they won.
Mm-hmm.
So when they came back and they saw a problem, they just tackled it head on. And sometimes it was picking away at it a piece at a time like we were doing, but we solved the problem that was there. We returned the fort to a viewable edifice for Americans for the bicentennial in 76.
Well, you know, and I'm sure we're going to get into the hauntings a lot more and stuff like that, but there is an issue. I mean, let's get into this right now because this is important, I think. There is an issue right now. We've learned this throughout the show. We talked about this the first half hour, that there basically, you know, there is a website. Let's get this website out there, too. SaveFortMifflin.com.
.org.
Sorry. Yeah, I Googled it. So I just clicked on the Google thing. So SaveFortMifflin.org out there for people to check out. Now, what's going on with this exactly? Because I've seen, like I told you earlier, we talked earlier in the day today, Tony, and I said, you know, I've been hearing about some buzzing about this. What exactly is happening here? I want to hear what's going on.
Okay, what happened basically is, with the downturn in the economy, the city of Philadelphia is cutting back drastically on everything that it administers. You folks are not East Coasters, but you've probably heard of the Mummers Parade that happens on New Year's Day in Philadelphia.
Yes.
Well, it's a local event that has international attraction to it. I mean, people plan to come to see the parade. It's an old tradition from England where you bring in the New Year's with loud noise and music and party, and it's just a colorful, exuberant way of celebrating your community. And the closest thing for the other listeners, I would say close to it would be Mardi Gras or Mardi Gras in New Orleans,
uh-huh.
or down in Rio de Janeiro when they celebrate just before Easter. So
Carnival?
It's that type of carnival.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I apologize.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's that way. There's costumes, there's music, there's competition. Neighborhoods are vying against other neighborhoods for, you know, token prizes for the pride of being the best. And the city of Philadelphia announces November 3rd that they have no money to run the parade. I mean, they literally saying, if you don't come up with the money to pay the policemen and the people who are going to clean up after the parade, we're not going to let you run it.
Wow.
And that's how bad it is in the city. So Fort Mifflin, even though it is a national historic landmark and a national historic battlefield site, and there's 14 buildings there, and they each in their own, they're classified as historic landmarks.
Yeah.
They basically said, well, we don't have any operating money for you. So you either find the operating money yourself or you close the doors.
Wow.
So this is pretty much what we were told a little earlier, too, is that they're just, we have no more money to give you guys. We can't pay the employees anymore to maintain this place. You'd think, you know, I understand that there's infrastructure that has to be paid for in a city, and there's things that have to take precedence. We got to make sure the sewage system works. we got to pay those people, right? We got to make sure that our electricity works and things like that. So there are things that take precedence. That's totally cool. But you'd think that something with a city that would bring people there, tourists and things there to check out this place, they would put some money into that because it would draw some income for them. But they're not doing that, apparently, it sounds like, Tony.
No, and for whatever reason, it is what it is. As my son so aptly says.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to stay, when I say we the people, because again, when we talk about government, you know, we are the government, but we really have little control over how the government spends the money they collect from us. So what we need to do is, and this is something that myself and a few other people in the paranormal community have done, we've gotten the word out. And the word's gotten out well.
Yeah.
It's people are rallying. And here's another interesting thing. People that come to Fort Mifflin for the first time to do a paranormal investigation, they when they're leaving, one of the quotes they put in there is, you know, I'm really interested in the paranormal, really never thought about too much about my country's history, but when you go to Fort Mifflin, like I did,
mm-hmm.
you can't leave and not appreciate what the people who came before us did so that we could be free. I mean, it's that inspiring a place.
Well, any place we've gone to, I mean, these historic sites, that's one thing I always tell people is that, you know, of course we're here to hunt ghosts. That's the big thing.
Right.
That's the number one thing we're here. We're here to ghost hunt. We're going to take pictures, audio, whatever it may be. But, you know, there's a good chance you may not get anything on film. There's a good chance you might not be able to get anything on your audio recorder, whatever it may be. But you should take a note of whatever place it may be. Look at this place and appreciate it for what it is and the history that is, you know, encompasses this. Fort Mifflin, you know, is a perfect example of that. I mean, you don't just you go there if you want to go there to ghost hunt. That's great. I mean, that's what you're there to do. But there is this aspect of history that you have to take into account, and you know that alone I think is worth the trip if you're going to go out there to visit Fort Mifflin.
Right, and then any ghostly activity would be a bonus.
Even if that's your thing, that's something you can grasp. That's something very tangible.
Right.
You know, and that's why I think people should embrace that more. And that ties in with what we're talking about here, Tony, as far as, you know, saving this place and keeping the doors open for people to come in there and visit this place over and over again.
Well, what options would they explore? Like, would they turn it over to the Park Service? Because I think the Park Service would, because of the battlefield tie-in, I think that they would end up being able to take it. Of course, that would close it off to ghost hunters. I mean, that's about the only thing I can think of. If it remains in Philadelphia's hands, then there's a lot more.
Well, they're obviously not doing anything.
They can't afford to. Yeah.
They're out of money, so they can't do that. So my question for you, Tony, was what can the average citizen who lives there, or maybe not even there, what can I do to help out all the way here from Michigan to help out your guys' cause to try to keep this structure around?
If you go to fortmifflin.us, the mm-hmm. website, there is a donation page there. Now, sometime by Tuesday or Wednesday, there should be a PayPal link on it.
Okay.
There is not one at this time.
Okay.
The only thing they have a secure page for credit cards, and you can always send a check, and they give the address. But PayPal, I think, is what most of the people that would listen to the show would use. They feel comfortable with it. They feel safe with it.
Yeah.
They've already entered all the information. So if you'd wait till the middle of the week and go there, you will probably find a PayPal. And you know what? With like other things in PayPal, send what you can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There are membership incentives which are on the site. You can, coming this week, you can pick one of the membership levels and become a member of Fort Mifflin on the Delaware for ongoing work.
Mm-hmm.
And again, pay through PayPal. If you live in the area, stop by and make a donation. I mean, even though the fort is quote-unquote closed, we do have someone there every day from 7:30 to 2:30 in the office.
Mm-hmm.
The executive director basically took a 50% cut in pay while not taking a cut in hours to try to keep this place open.
Well,
a gentleman by the name of Lee Anderson.
That's fantastic.
His wife's 100% behind him on it, and he's just doing this to try to get us through, you know, the rough times.
Well, you know, that's somebody.
Only CEOs would think that way.
Well, I was just going to say that, you know, we talk about it so much on the show here is just, you know, short-sightedness. You know,
right.
And that some people think, well, geez, God forbid I take a pay cut, you know. But, you know, if you had some type of vision to go, look, you know, it's going to be tough here, but I know by making this sacrifice in the long run, it'll work out for all of us. It'll be great. And that's someone, you know, you said Lee Anderson?
Yeah, Lee Anderson's the executive director.
Yeah, that's somebody, that's fantastic, and I salute a person like that who has that kind of vision to go, you know what, I'm going to make a sacrifice here for the good that I think it's going to help people out, all of us out down the road. And that's what it's all about, I think, really.
And let me tell you, he wasn't making big dollars to begin with. I mean,
yeah.
It's a not-for-profit organization. His if you want to dig into it, you can see what he was making. He's making half that right now.
Yeah.
And again, wow. Thank his wife, too. He's supported by his wife on this.
Oh.
You know, wife and family. Good. So it's not just like a guy going out, a single guy going out and doing it on his own. You have to remember there's a commitment of a whole family for this. So I'm thinking, if and they're able to do it, enough said about that, but give what you can. If you can't give, write. Say, hey, how about some funding for the fort?
Yeah.
Pass the links on that you see on other sites. Keep passing the message on.
Well, that's a good use for MySpace right there. You know, I mean, that, and I've seen that. I told you that today, Tony. That when I'm like, you know, I went on Satan's website, aka MySpace, there, and I saw people posting, you know, stuff like, say, Fort Mifflin up there. So it's a good tool to use that for. Get the word out there so people can, you know, people can take action on something like this.
Yeah, I can't remember off the top of my head which one it is, but it's either MySpace.com/SaveFortMifflin or it's Facebook SaveFortMifflin. One of them's that, and the other one is one of those, I think Facebook does, where people are trying to collect money type of pages also.
Uh-huh.
But if you Google it, that's the answer for everything. You'll find it.
Yeah.
And, well, that's absolutely true.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. Like, I have received personally over 4,000 emails since this started. And I spend time every day answering these people individually. And the ideas that have come up, one person is... can't come to the meeting. We have a meeting on February 7th at 5 p.m. That's a Saturday at the Fort Hospital.
Uh-huh.
It's a town hall meeting, grassroots, trying to solve the problem, put our heads together.
Yeah.
One woman said, I really can't make it. You know, it's like a 300-mile drive, and I have to be at work on Sunday afternoon. But I'm a geocacher,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't really know about geocaching. She explained it to me.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, let's put a geocache on the property, the public land right in front of the fort,
uh-huh.
this will bring people to the fort. I go, that's a great idea. So
great idea.
That's the whole idea of, like, linking this out to everybody because everybody can think of something.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And that the MySpace page is, MySpace.com/SaveFortMifflin. That's that. You were correct on that, Tony. So you guys can go there and, I guess, add yourself on there and, you know, to support these people and get the word out. So that's another big thing, too. It's a great cause. I think it's something that needs to happen, and I really want to make sure we talked about that tonight because I think it's really, really, really important.
And I think that after, because we've got what Bonnie event coming up, right?
Yeah, we got paranormal news here coming
paranormal
up.
Paranormal news coming up.
When we
moment.
Come back, though, I want to get into the good stuff.
I want to talk about a little bit. We've only touched on the history. I mean, I love this stuff that's going on. I think that it's important. I think that we do need to get the word out.
Yeah, definitely.
But I want to hear the really juicy stuff from a ghost hunter's point of view. A little bit of history. You know,
well, this whole Philadelphia experiment thing we need to get into. That's really important.
I
want to
get into Philadelphia, and then of course. The ghosts. I mean, who doesn't want to hear about the ghosts of Fort Mifflin?
Oh, yeah, totally. You cool with that, Tony?
There's some great, juicy ghost stories.
That sounds great. Why don't we take a quick break so let's hang tight here.
And while we're doing that, fire up your browsers. aparanormalhistory.com. Where's that coming from?
That's coming from the Fort Mifflin, Fort Mifflin MySpace page. I brought the volume up and
aww,
I brought it.
Oh, that's pretty.
All right, I just killed it. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Just surprised me. I'm like, what's that going on?
Fire up your web browsers and go to
listen to that great song. Yeah.
www.aparanormalhistory.com because we're talking to Tony Saletti about Fort Mifflin more after this.
Ghostly Talk!
Version 3.0.
Thank you, remember Shadow Government.
Shadow Government. Strange Rituals. New World
Shadow
Order.
Government. Strange
Buried
Rituals.
Treasures.
New
planetary
mind
control.
Shadow
Government.
Strange Rituals. New World Order. Planetary mind
control. Out there. It's a strange world.
Visit OutThereRadio.net for more information.
Welcome to Paranormal News on
Ghostly Talk Radio. Paranormal News is produced by Genesis Creations Entertainment. I'm your host, Bonnie Vance. San Diego Paranormal is an affiliate for Sideshow Collectibles and Collectibles Today. From the Munsters to Scary Movie and even Pirates of the Caribbean, we've got you covered. How about a statue of Elvira for your desk? Please go to www.sdparanormal.com and look for Sideshow Collectibles and Haunted Collectibles on the left-hand navigation bar. The face of the Wayne County Historical Museum's mummy hasn't been seen for thousands of years, but soon area residents will be able to watch as a forensic artist reconstructs its features. Brenda Robertson Stewart is an Indianapolis painter, sculptor, and forensic artist specializing in reconstructing skulls for identification purposes, generally in crimes. However, she is donating her skills to the museum to bring to life the face of the museum's mummy. Museum founder Julia Meeks Garr purchased the mummy during a 1929 visit to Cairo, Egypt. It's Stewart's project now to uncover another of the mummy's secrets, what he looked like. Measurements and photos will help her build a replica of the skull that will serve as the base for the reconstruction of the face. She expects building the replica to take about a month. Once the replica skull is complete, Stewart will return to the museum to compare it to the real thing. After she is sure that the replica is correct, Stewart will begin reconstructing the face, working on it at the museum where visitors can watch the progress. Most of Stewart's forensic reconstruction work is sadly related to homicides. She didn't see any evidence of deadly trauma in the mummy's skull, though. Stewart's effort to make the mummy's face lifelike are being filmed by independent Indianapolis filmmaker Dan T. Hall, who got her involved in the project. Hall did some filming in the museum as part of his paranormal documentary, Ghost Stories 2, Unmasking the Dead. The film shows how Hall, with the help of a psychic and team of paranormal investigators, made an attempt to communicate with the mummy. The 140-foot-high Colorado Street Bridge is an impressive crossing in Southern California, which rests on the original Route 66. This bridge is known for a number of suicides which have occurred since 1913 when the bridge was completed. 6 years after the construction, the first suicide took place, and it is now estimated that more than 100 people have plummeted to their deaths from the heights, although it has been argued that figures are closer to 200. Many of these suicides are blamed on the Great Depression of the 1930s. Researchers who've investigated the bridge claim that many people have been lured to their death by a ghost of a construction worker who allegedly fell to his death 6 months before the structure was finished. At the time, no one was sure about the incident because the worker was said to have plummeted into a concrete pit used to support one of the pillars of the bridge. His body was never found. For more information on these stories, please go to www.sdparanormal.com and the Paranormal News feed page. Don't forget, sign up for a free subscription to Paranormal News. Thanks for joining us today on Paranormal News. If you'd like to sponsor or advertise on Paranormal News, please send us an email at parxnews@aol.com. You can listen to Paranormal News on Ghostly Talk Radio at www.ghostlytalk.com. Please check out their other fine shows. Or you can join us at paranormalnews.mypodcast.com. Until next time, I'm your host, Bonnie Vance.
What are we made of? Why do I get sick? How can I live a more balanced whole life? These are just a few of the questions explored each week by naturopath, medical intuitive, and clairvoyant, Dr. Rita Louise on Just Energy Radio. Explore your possibilities every Friday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time. Join us at justenergyradio.com.
You are invoking the spirits to help you.
but the forces they represent are so sinister and powerful. You shall be a toy in their hands.
About Fort Mifflin tonight.
The fort that saved America.
Yep. With author Tony Saletti. We're going to get into some of the ghost stuff now. He talked about a bit of history the last half hour. Doug is having a coughing fit here. Hope you enjoyed that, pal, Mal.
Sorry about that.
We're going to get into some of the ghost stuff now, which I think is really cool. And this whole Philadelphia experiment connection, we'll have to hold off, right? But let's get into some of these ghost stories, Tony. From Fort Mifflin.
Favorite.
Yeah, go ahead.
My favorite, and that of my wife, Barbara's, is the story of the screaming woman. People have heard blood-curdling screams echoing through the fort, to the point where Southwest detectives, the district detectives who patrol that part of the city of Philadelphia, uh-huh, would come down on calls about a woman in distress, and you'd never find anything. The fort was locked up tight. They examined it. Well, a psychic had come there in the 1990s, and she had centered on the second floor of the officers' quarters, and she said that it was a woman named Elizabeth, and this Elizabeth was a officer's wife.
Mm-hmm.
And she felt that Elizabeth and her daughter Elizabeth had had a falling out over her daughter marrying beneath her station. Now, this is the 1800s,
mm-hmm,
you know, right after the Revolution. And she threw her daughter out of the family. Well, during one of the yellow fever epidemics in Philadelphia, her daughter was said to have died, and this sent her mother into uncontrollable grief. I mean, she had never been able to reconcile her relationship with her daughter.
Yeah.
And then it was said in the legend, because of the psychic, that Elizabeth hung herself from the second story of the officers' quarters.
Oh, boy.
Now, mm-hmm, when I was researching Fort Mifflin, I research history and paranormal, I found that there was an Elizabeth there. Her name was Elizabeth Pratt. Here's where the story changes.
Okay.
Elizabeth Pratt was a sergeant's wife, and she did have a daughter named Elizabeth. Now, these are also in the records of Fort Mifflin and in the National Archives. I'm thinking the psychic might have done a little research before she made it into the fort. Well,
wait a minute. Whoa.
That's
not good, is it?
Yeah.
Well, because when you study older handwriting, sometimes letters look different, numbers look different when they actually are.
Right.
Well, in fact, Elizabeth Pratt did die in 1804.
Uh-huh.
Well, the problem was that the officers' quarters weren't built to 1814.
1804. Okay.
Interesting. All right. Okay.
All right.
Now, her daughter was named Elizabeth, and she died in 1803. From fever.
Okay.
Now, these are right in the fort's records. And before her daughter Elizabeth died, an infant Pratt died. It was not uncommon at the time of a child died soon after childbirth. It was never given a name, so history never recorded whether it was a boy child or a girl child.
Uh-huh.
Now, that being said, Elizabeth, after losing two children in a row and then dying, you know, then contracting whatever disease she contracted herself and died, could have been screaming in the fort, but not on the second floor of the officers' quarters.
Because it wasn't even in existence for another 9 years.
Yeah.
Now, there was in 1863 an Elizabeth Bunker who could have been in those officers' quarters. Her husband was a non-commissioned officer, and she died of gastritis, and I have her, in my book, I have her death certificate from the Philadelphia coroner's office in the book. You can, when you read it, you can see some of the documents that I found to back up my suppositions in the book.
Uh-huh.
Now, the very interesting thing was when we were doing our candlelight ghost tours this year, my wife had a problem with one of her legs, and so she was sitting back at the Ford Hospital, which we use for, you know, greeting guests. And Lorraine Irby, who is the scheduling coordinator for Fort Mifflin, says, "You got to hear this story." Well, there was a docent there, a part-time docent, who was related to not to the Pratts, but the Platts, another old Philadelphia family. And he said that he never really even dreams, but he had this very vivid dream of this woman coming saying, "My name is Elizabeth Pratt." And he said, "Well, you mean Platt. You're one of my ancestors." And she says, "No, Elizabeth Pratt." She goes, "And I am happy that my story has finally been told correctly." So, in a way, as paranormal investigators, one of our duties is to sometimes we have clients who we try to find an answer for. Well, in this case, the client that we had was Elizabeth Pratt. And through another person, she told that, you know, she was glad that she was no longer being told, be called a woman who hung herself, took her own life, but her true story was told. So it's kind of one of those, the circle of life things where you get what all paranormal investigators get, a resolution for the client. In this case, the client had been dead for over 200 years.
Well, there really, a lot of times there isn't really a resolution for the client. A lot of places you go to. I mean, that's one of these few, I guess you could call, verifiable situations.
Well, it's not verifiable, but it
well,
is.
Well, not, but it not is. Conclusively like there is a ghost here. But somebody came forward and said, okay, you know, through another person said, you know, "Thank you for clearing my story. This is what's happened here." So it's a lot more meat than most stories have as far as trying to get some answers. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, a lot of times you can't, you don't get those kind of answers.
This is really, really interesting because it sounds like there's like the mix-up of Elizabeth, right?
Yeah.
And how did the Elizabeth name even get into it in the first place? But
yeah.
All of it's fascinating, but it doesn't yet, as far as I know, help explain the screaming lady.
Yeah,
what people do when they hear it. I mean, the cops have been called out. You know, detectives have been searching the building, and they never find this
itself.
Lady.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
And so how often is she heard? Is it like one of those that happens on the same day, or only in the full moon on a foggy night, or is it random?
It seems to be random because the fort was from 1771 to 1952, it was an active military fort, sometimes demobilized, but there was always somebody there. So this happens dozens of times during the year, but different times of the day and night. Now, my investigations at Fort Mifflin showed that there's more activity during the day than at night, but then again, the most activity at a military base, unless the nation's on war footing, is during the day.
Mm-hmm.
So these discarnate entities that we are trying to explain would more logically be more active during the day than at night. My study of the paranormal goes back to the 1960s, and I was there at a time when the people I was first working with were New Age hippies, but they were college professors and doctors and lawyers.
Uh-huh.
Who were studying the paranormal in their spare time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was too young to be a paranormal investigator, as we know today, but times were different then. And I learned a lot from these people. And it's amazing on how, we used reel-to-reel tape recorders to do EVP work. We used compasses to check differentiations in the magnetic field.
Yeah.
But we still got results.
And this was during, I mean, a lot of this goes back to what you were saying, that you did, this work was done during the day also. There was no differentiation between the day and the nighttime as far as activity is concerned.
Yeah, I really think this lights off thing and not to put anybody down, is more or less the funhouse factor.
Well, yeah. I mean,
I can only believe that.
I think that that's... Yeah, that's the point I was driving to. Is that you know,
I also agree. I'm unsure that ghosts are afraid of the light.
I've seen some
light,
fantastic.
You know.
I mean, some really interesting photos taken. You know, that
full daylight.
Full daylight.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, the whole lights off thing. I mean, we've heard that you know, well, they you know, if they illuminate, you'll see them easier in the camera and all this and blah blah blah. And I don't think there's much of a difference that you have to wait till you know the sun goes down to start ghost hunting. I think it is just a Hollywood type thing.
Yeah, I also don't think there's a dead hour or whatever the heck they call
it. Dead time, yeah.
Dead time or whatever.
Yeah, that's when we're sleeping. That's what dead time is. Okay. Yeah. So that, yeah, that's interesting to hear that though from somebody you know who's been doing this for a while.
Right.
Quite a while. For you to say, you know, yeah, there's been a lot of activity even during the day there. So I find that really cool.
Yeah, and like at Fort Mifflin, you go there during the day, and because it's a not visited national monument,
yeah,
you pay your $6, and you can go in and do paranormal investigations for $6.
And they're cool with that. I mean, the people there, because I mean, we know there's places, or you know, nowadays even more so, there's certain landmarks or historical sites that. If you go there and you pay, which is a lot more than $6 sometimes to visit some of these places, they frown upon that.
It depends who they're run by.
Well,
run
yeah.
by Park Service, no. You can't even...
Yeah.
They wouldn't let you.
No. Fort Mifflin is paranormal friendly. In fact, the majority of the support coming to Fort Mifflin now is the paranormal community. I mean, they're rallying around it. That's right. Wonderful. Fantastic. But you want ghost stories, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
I want to know about... Because this is a fort, and I picture a working fort protecting the country, servicemen, and things like that. Where do children and dogs fit in?
Well, the thing is, just like a military installation, now families live there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And children are really interesting. I placed them in 1854. Just after the Second Seminole Wars and then the Mexican excursion. And a family came to Fort Mifflin. It was the commandant who had served his country, and he was reunited with his wife. And in it, it talks about, in the letters that him and his wife exchanged through their life, you could tell that these people were really in love with each other. These are two people that were in love with each other.
Yeah.
It wasn't just like a marriage of convenience, and the colonel's name was Brevet Lieutenant Colonel Lucien Bonaparte Webster. What a moniker!
Man,
wow!
And he had served his country, and his wife had served his country by being an army wife. You know, let's not discount the sacrifice that women and their families put out for the men who serve us.
Mm.
Well. They got transferred to Fort Mifflin, and the biographer of the family says that when you read, and I read the letters too, when you read the letters, you can see that this was the happiest time of their marriage since they got married and even afterwards that. And even the dismal place at Fort Mifflin, they enjoyed themselves there. In one of their letters, it talks, the wife of the colonel talks about the children, and it talks about the children. Names them. Josephine looks puny and delicate. I feel quite anxious about her health. Emma and Fanny are healthy and rugged as possible. And when they all get together romping with their dogs, they make the old ramparts ring with their hilarious shouts. What's those? You remember sometimes these paranormal events are happy events, not just sad events.
Yeah.
So I think that the children that are heard are these, and this is just one family that was there. This just mentions children and dogs, and these are the sounds that come together. This could be them. This could be a residual manifestation of their happiness at the fort.
Well, why not? I mean, if you want to get into the whole idea of emotion, we've talked about that a gazillion times here. It doesn't always have to be. We've always said strong emotions. And one of those ones that have come up is love. Not just, you know, anger or fear or whatever. We've said love. And, I mean, love and happiness, another thing, extreme happiness. There are some people, suffice to say, that may be hard to believe right now, that are really, really happy. And there was people back then that were really, really happy, right? And that could imprint itself on the environment also. I think that would be just as viable as, you know, I hate to say it, a murder or somebody being really freaked out or extreme anger. It could imprint just the same, I think, Tony.
Yeah, and there's a sad part to that story also. Frances Webster, the Lieutenant Colonel's wife, soon after they got back together again, they did what couples often do, and they renewed their marriage vows.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that child died.
Aww.
And that child died at the fort.
Aww.
So, again, you have the full ethos of emotion that flows through this fort. It's a wonderful story beyond the paranormal, but just that how human beings will, what they'll do so that they can keep themselves free and keep others free. I mean, they give of themselves.
Uh-huh. And again, it's just that strong emotion, I think, that I agree with that. I don't see any difference between the two, actually. Because, of course, we hear a lot of stories you hear are always, well, there was a murder here. Somebody was killed.
Right.
You know, that's why it's being haunted. But I think, we hear stories of children playing all the time. You know, a lot of stories about children that you can hear children playing or you can hear songs being sung and things like that. And that sounds like a pretty happy thing. I mean, most children, when they're that young, their first 10 years of life, all they really know how to do is love, I think. They don't really know. They haven't been conditioned to the point where they have that hard exterior, like, when you turn about 11. So, I mean, that stuff makes perfect sense to me. What else?
I think a place there at the fort that people would be interested in. Because I hope that a lot of ghost hunters out there are like, wow, have heard of this place, this might be like, oh.
Yeah,
and I've heard more. I've heard the stories. Right. I got to go there, or if they hadn't heard of this place, I hope you check it out.
Yeah.
paranormalhistory.com and safefortmifflin.org. But one place I know that always attracts ghost hunters, no matter what side of any fake controversy you're on, do ghosts hang around in graveyards or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that sounds like it would attract a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I know I would walk around in it. There's a desecrated graveyard?
Yeah. What happened was the fort used to be an island. And originally, the people, when they died at the fort, because remember, we didn't do embalmings and we didn't have funeral homes back in the Revolutionary War, were buried right outside the fort, right outside the walls of the fort on the island. And this went on for a while. In fact, Elizabeth Pratt, the daughter Elizabeth and the infant Elizabeth were also buried right outside of it. And it was kind of hard for me to track down where this cemetery was until I went, dug a little deeper, and there was a commandant that was there. In this place, Tiny was a captain. And when he was stationed there, he was another officer that had come up from doing battle with the Native Americans in the South, when we stole their land from them,
mm-hmm.
but
several times.
Yeah,
several times. Yeah, but yeah.
Well, what happened was, it describes him collapsing on the center parade ground, and he was dying, and there was a lot of gnashing of teeth because this was a band of brothers who had just fought a common enemy together, and they loved their captain. I can't say that word on TV, on the radio, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But his men loved him because he was fair and he treated them right. Mm-hmm. And he died. He died basically from what might have been malaria, because the death certificate is kind of ambiguous for the time.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking he might have contracted malaria and eventually died from it. And it describes him as being buried outside the fort, just beyond the moat on the meadow. Now, remember, we're still on an island. Mm-hmm. And the description doesn't say across the moat, across the meadow, across the river, on the mainland, but it says there.
Mm-hmm.
So then I have, when they reburied everybody, because the fort was going some through some changes, they buried this, all the people that are there at an old yellow fever station up the river. They were then taken again and then buried in the National Cemetery system that was started right after the war between the states by Lincoln, Gettysburg being first.
Right.
And that's also where Elizabeth Pratt and her child are buried. They're buried at the National Cemetery at Limekiln Pike. But when I say a desecrated graveyard, is there's an article from the 1912 Philadelphia Inquirer talking about where the people knew basically when the government moved people out of graves. All they did was go in, open a grave, take a long bone out or a skull out, and they said, okay, this grave's empty now. And there were still bones left behind. Well, in 1912, people came in and they were doing some relic hunting, you know, looking for souvenirs.
Uh-huh.
And the Grand Army of the Republic and some other fraternal organizations were coming out to put decorations on the graves of the veterans that were left because they knew they were still there. And they had found recently dug graves where people, and that's the desecrated graveyard that's at the fort.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, I mean, is there any, as far as activity is concerned, I mean, we have these desecrated graves, and we've heard these stories before, where you know somebody upsets the natural balance, and then all things go haywire. Have they? What kind of experiences or things have been seen or heard there?
It is basically a sense of unease at that point. Like uh-huh. You know that old saying, I feel like I'm walking over somebody's grave.
Oh yeah.
And again, I think the emotions are because these people were long dead by the time when they were being moved a second time.
Yeah.
What I think it is I think it was the indignation of those brave men that had fought in the war between the states, the Grand Army of the Republic, who had came there and found their comrade in arms from previous wars graves desecrated. And I think it's that anger that's actually imprinted on the soil of Fort Mifflin.
Wow. It very well could be. We got a couple minutes left, unfortunately. We have to talk about the Philadelphia experiment because it's probably like our top three favorite things to talk about here on the show. Tony, so what's the relation? We have this thing written here, but what's the relation between Fort Mifflin and the Philadelphia experiment?
Well, the Fort Mifflin is just down the river from the Philadelphia Navy Yard.
Okay.
And the Philadelphia Navy Yard is where, when the ships were built, they were sent to the Philadelphia Navy Yard to have arms put on them, the cannons, machine guns,
mm-hmm.
the final fitting. And then the ship would drop down to Fort Mifflin, which was being used at the time for a magazine, for weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And the soldiers who were there, when the atmospheric conditions were just right, you could see St. Elmo's fire dancing across the tops of the superstructures of the battleships and the cruisers that were being built there.
Mm-hmm.
Because what they were doing was they were degaussing a ship. Now, you degauss a ship to mm-hmm. change its magnetic signature mm-hmm. so that magnetic mines aren't attached to it.
Yeah, right. That was the whole reason that that's what they were doing. That was their original intention for the experiment.
Right. And now, you know the part about the sailors appearing in a bar?
Right.
Yeah, let me tell you, sailors appear in bars all the time. But but here's what happens. In 1941, about a few months before the bombing of Pearl Harbor, there was a convoy that had left the East Coast with under lend-lease for Britain, and it was being escorted by some World War I era battleships. And one of those battleships was the first battleship that was sunk, one of our battleships sunk during World War II by a German submarine.
Mm-hmm.
Now here comes the other part of the Philadelphia experiment. What happened was the nation was outraged, and 100 sailors' lives were lost, and they were published, and the families were contacted. Well, there's a sailor that's in a bar in Philadelphia, and when the paper comes in, he reads his name as being one of the sailors who was lost at sea.
Ah!
So he goes out to a phone, and I'm not quite sure if there was a phone in the house or it was a party line, and calls his family and said, hey, I was supposed to be stationed on that ship. I'm stationed at the Philadelphia Navy Yard.
Uh-huh.
And I have a letter to the editor from the commandant of the Philadelphia Navy Yard saying, hey, this guy is actually here. He's on leave right now, but as soon as he gets back, we'll have him contact his family.
Uh-huh.
So you have a sailor that was at sea on a ship that appears in a bar in Philadelphia. So you put the sailor who miraculously appears from death's door,
mm-hmm.
and the St. Elmo's fire caused by the degaussing and the right atmospheric conditions, you got the Philadelphia experiment.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Unfortunately, we are right at the top of the hour. I'm glad we were able to get that in. Jeez.
Thank you, Tony.
Yeah, Tony, can't thank you enough for joining us. Learned a lot. And also, everybody check that out. What are the websites again, Doug?
Oh, yes. www.aparanormalhistory.com.
Mm-hmm.
And then savefortmifflin.org.
Yeah, and then also if you want, as far as MySpace is concerned, myspace.com/savefortmifflin. A lot of cool stuff to check out on all those websites. And, Tony, we can't thank you enough again for joining us.
Yeah, guys, and if you want a copy of the book, send $22 of the fort, and I'll put one in the mail for you.
Yeah.
As a fundraiser. I'm not selling the fort.
No.
The book anywhere up at the fort.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Sure. Everybody check that out, too. The book and everything that's out there right now. Tony, again, thank you. We do have to go to break, though. And,
yeah.
Wait, we'll get after the break here.
Oh, yeah, we've got Michael Trudeau coming up, returning to Ghostly Talk to tell us about the cashless society.
Mm.
For more info, visit ghostlytalk.com.